Hello and welcome back to another episode of ABA Mom. I'm your host, Allie, and mom of five. Today we have a special guest, Taree, who is a clinical director at Connect In Care, Charlotte, North Carolina. Taree, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Allie.
Yeah, of course. So can you share a little bit about your background in the schools and what initially drew you into the fieldwork of applied behavior analysis?
Sure. So I have a degree. My bachelor's is in criminology. So I have a degree. That was so weird saying. Ooh. But my bachelor's is criminology. And then I became a teacher. So, you know, that was, I don't know, it doesn't really like add up. But in my mind, it does, because it's always kind of been the behavioral part that I liked about criminology. So I became a pre-K teacher. My very first year, they were like, would you mind having like a classroom with EC kids? And I was like, no, like, okay, we can totally rock that, right?
Yeah.
And so I had a very small class. I had like about 8 general education students and 4 students with IEPs. And very quickly, I found that like no one really had the answers on like what to do with my kiddos with IEPs, right? Like I had some pretty severe behaviors in my classroom. And so, you know, I went through my district just kind of searching and searching for answers and couldn't find anything. At the same time, I was getting like a second teaching certificate at a local university, Nicholls State University. And I ran into like the ABA department. And I met this professor, and I started asking him questions, and he kind of started giving me little things to do. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is working. Like this, what is this? What is this magic you speak of? Right. And that's how I got into ABA, because I was like, this stuff works. Like this really works. I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm just following directions of someone and it's working. So after I finished my teaching certificate, I went back to school for high incidence and with a concentration of ABA. Yeah.
I feel like we have like a similar story, because I actually started out in education as well. Like in my bachelor's was in psychology, but I'm like, well, oh, wow. I don't really know what I'm going to do with it. And so I became a teacher, and I was at a private school, and I was like, and I had no idea what I was doing, because I also had ESE, but it was a private school. So they didn't even have IEPs. They just had like special accommodation paper. It wasn't a 504. It wasn't an IEP. It was just some accommodations to help them. And, you know, something very similar is I stumbled upon ABA, because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. But I stumbled upon a friend who was a behavior analyst. And I said, okay, so tell me what you do. And then I was like, you know, I'm going to go ahead and get my master's in this. So I was already in my master's for ESE at University of West Florida. And then they added the ABA cohort.
Wow.
Helped me through my teaching career.
Yeah, that's so parallel to what happened with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it was a new program at Nicholls State too, the ABA cohort. Like, and so, yeah, I'm so grateful. I feel like maybe it found us.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, okay, we need help.
Right.
No, that's awesome. So you spent a lot of years advocating for parents in the school system. What are some key challenges parents have faced when navigating educational landscape for their children in special needs?
Well, I think one of the hardest things when your kid is young, right, at the pre-K age, is knowing, like, you know, are these behaviors typical behaviors, or they know are divergent behaviors? And then you're kind of really leaning in on teachers to be able to tell you like, hey, your child's learning a little bit different, or your child might need a little bit more accommodations and modifications. And then I feel like in the younger years, it's hard, because you have to go through so much in the school system to be able, no one's diagnosing in the school system, right? And then even for a teacher to suggest that your child needs to get diagnosed, or maybe at least needs to explore a diagnosis, right? There's a fine line between that, because most school systems are like, no, we're not saying that. We're not going to let them know these things. And so I think the challenges are not necessarily ones like just by parents, but just by the system in the whole, right? Like, we're the ones that they're spending time with. And so their parents are counting on us to be able to tell them like, hey, your child needs extra help and accommodations. And then I think some other challenges are just, you know, a school is a business, first of all, right? Got to be ran like a business. And, you know, they have teachers and programs in place, but not all the time is it for the individual needs of a student. And I think that that's oftentimes where parents feel like, well, they're doing the best that they can. And the school is doing the best that they can, but like, Are they doing it and thinking about your kid and your kid's needs, you know? And I think sometimes parents have a hard time advocating for their kid's needs or knowing, okay, this may not be what everyone's kid needs with autism, but this is what my kid with autism needs. And how are you going to be able to help me, the school, accommodate that? And I think sometimes parents just kind of have that guilt of like, not wanting to ask for more or not knowing to ask for more too. And so just kind of advocating is difficult, knowing what are the options, right? Because
Right.
schools are only going to tell you what the options are that's convenient for them.
What are some valuable lessons that you've learned from your time in the schools that you believe will inform your work as a clinical director?
So I learned how typical schools work, right? How schools run, what are expectations in schools? What are expectations when it comes to the learning, how fast students need to learn. And as a clinical director, I feel like I really have a great opportunity to prepare kids for school and to help, because I feel like there's a really big gap in when you're outside of the school system of knowing what happens in the school system, right? So there is a lot of wait time in the school system. We're not necessarily preparing our kids for those things because, you know, as parents and providers, if we haven't been in the school system to realize like there's going to be interruptions in class, there's going to be
Right.
moments when the teacher is not able to provide direct instruction. What do we do in those moments, right? How do we prepare our kids for those? And so not just as a clinical director, but as a mom too. I think it was really important, like with my older son when he was in school, and just something simple, like he's having a hard time raising his hand. Okay, well, guess what we did at the dinner table that night? No, and not even just that night. We did it plenty of nights, please believe. But like, you
One
know,
time.
where he spoke, he rose his hand and
Yeah.
raised his hand. And so
Great.
that's just something I think like there's just a disconnect. And so having that experience inside the school system, knowing all of the things that a kid really needs to be successful in that system, and having the ABA background and now in a clinical director position to be able to help prepare them for those moments.
I love that. And I love that you kind of shared like your personal story there too, and how, it directly impacts you, and how, and I think too, when I think about education and being a mom is sometimes I don't know what my kids need at school. So sometimes I just find out later. Like I'm just like, okay,
Right.
so, it's like, okay, your kid is struggling with time. And I'm like, I didn't know that. Thanks for
Right.
sharing. I had no idea that they were struggling with time,
Yeah.
I think that communication piece is so important that sometimes schools, they get busy, they just forget. They don't communicate that. And there's so many parents that I think would be willing to help with their kids if the little extra that they need. How does your role as a clinical director differ from your previous experience in the school systems? And what is the most excited news in your role?
Okay. So I think it differs because I feel like now I have like the full picture, right? And so like I know what's our goal. I mean, and I know it's different for each kid, right? Like so sometimes we have parents who are like, "Hey, we're going to homeschool our kid." Okay. Well, I know what homeschooling looks like, so we're going to help prepare your kid for all of those things. And so I think that that's a little bit one thing that differs is that now I have a different perspective. Like I'm able to look at everything, you know, have all these different experiences. So I'm able to just kind of prepare kids for whatever experiences they are going to need. And then the difference, I think, is that like we're going to do some antecedent strategies, right? We're not just going to be working on consequence strategies here, because that's what's big in the school, right? And there, you know, there's not many antecedent strategies. And oftentimes the strategies that they have for consequences are reinforcing behaviors and not decreasing them. And so,
Like suspension sometimes for escape.
right. Yeah. Or yeah, like you don't want to come to school. Yeah, exactly that. You don't want to come to school, so we're going to suspend you because you didn't come to school. Well, thanks. That's really helpful. So yeah, I think that's mostly the difference is that we're going to have some antecedent strategies. So we're going to really be changing behavior here, you know? And then your last question was, what am I most excited about this new world? Just making a difference, just helping families and truly preparing kids to be ready for whatever learning environment that they're going to be in.
I love it. I love that. And I love that you're all about like helping the family too. That's awesome.
Yes, that's, I mean, how else are we going to really help the
Yeah,
child if we're
I
not helping
know.
the family? Like it all comes together. It's a package.
Exactly. So I think sometimes, my experience as an ABA, sometimes I have kind of two types of families. I either have the family that comes in, they're like, oh, like it's a relief. Like you're here to kind of just take care of it. And then I have the family that wants to be really like involved in it. And I love you know, kind of a little bit of both, but then showing them it's like, okay, so now it's your turn. So here's some strategies that like we've kind of gone over, like, so you can practice with them too. So I love that you're with the whole family, because that's all of our client versus just the client.
Right.
In your experience, what are some most effective strategies for fostering collaboration between parents and professionals in both schools and clinical setting?
So I think just opening up conversation, kind of doing a, like, we listen and we don't judge. I know there's like a little, maybe it's, you know, it's not popular anymore, but like, you know, letting parents and teachers know that like, we're not judging you. Like, just because we have the answers for things doesn't mean that like you're doing it wrong in a way that like, you know what you know until you know something different, right? So I think it's just, you know, being transparent through both places and letting, making, you know, setting an environment where parents and professionals feel like they can let their guard down to truly be honest and transparent and to know that like, hey, we all have the same goal, right? Like our goal is to make this kid as successful and independent as possible. So let's figure it out. Let's work together. And I think making sure that as a professional, that you're not rigid with your, with yourself, with your responses. Right. So I think the most effective strategies is just opening up the door for them to come, waiting, you know, for them to ask for help, asking if they want help too. I think that's a big thing that I usually do is I say like, okay, is this something that you're just kind of complaining about today? Or are we really going to make a difference? Because like, if we're really going to make a change, we're going to have to, you know, sit down and make a plan and do some things. And sometimes parents and teachers, it's not that big of a behavior. They're not ready to do that, right? So I think just kind of listening to their needs too. Yeah.
I love that. That goes back to like that compassionate care too. So just sometimes a parent just wants to talk, like they don't necessarily want you to solve their problem. And it may not be like the top, you know, problem. So it's just like, right, something like, this is really bothering me today. And I just want to talk about it. So I think that's really important too. And that's a really good point, because in asking them if they want help with that, because sometimes they don't, they just want to tell you about it.
Yes.
And I definitely, as a mom, like, I feel that, because there's sometimes I'm like, I just want to talk about it. Like, even with my husband, I'm just like, I just want to tell you about a problem. I don't want you to solve it. I just want you to know how I feel. And then I'm going to let it go.
Right. Right. Times as I co-parent with my ex, where I've said things and he's like, well, aren't these the type of things that like you really know how to change? And I'm like, hey, we're not getting into that right now. Yeah. Right? We're not really problem solving. I just need a minute.
That's true. What advice would you give to a parent who feels overwhelmed or uncertain about seeking ABA services for their child in a clinical setting?
So I think it's important for them to, one, do some research, right? And ask questions. And like, I think it's important for BCBAs, like for my student analysts, I always tell them, you have to know the bad things that people are saying about ABA too, so that you know how to defend and answer questions and make people feel comfortable, so that they know that we're not just trying to sell you something, you know, that we're honestly just trying to give you great services so that it's beneficial, but they need to know that you're being truthful. So I think part of that is also talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? And so I think, you know, guiding them through research, you know, letting them do their own research or sending them research if they, because sometimes that's overwhelming too. You know, you start looking up things and it's like, all of this stuff is happening. So, you know, when they have a question, finding a few articles that maybe support and also kind of not support that, so that they can see both sides, taking their time. And then when it comes to the clinical setting, I think that's another, a little bit different too, because like, first you want to see like, are ABA services going to be a fit for my kid? And then in what setting is it going to be best? And when you're considering the setting, I think it's really important for you to consider, what are your goals for your kiddo, right? Like, are we sending them to a public traditional school where they're going to have to know routines and procedures in order to be considered having a good day, right? And if so, then maybe the clinical setting is best, but exploring other options and not just saying this is the best setting, right? Let's explore all of the settings for it, so that I think parents can make informed, data-driven decisions.
I think that's true too. And I know some clinics, I don't know if your clinic exactly like what your structure is, but sometimes they'll let like the parents kind of like sit in sessions and things like that, like if they'd like to, or kind of shadow. Does your clinic, do you guys offer that? Or
so we haven't really explored it yet. Because I don't start my position till Monday.
Oh, okay.
However, I do think it's important. And I've been a clinical director before. And so I think as long as it's not going to disturb the kid, you know, if
Right.
there's a way that we can do it, so where we can just rearrange for them to kind of see what's happening, and then just having that communication with them too, so that they feel comfortable and they know what's happening. But I do think it's really important. I mean, as a mom, like, you want to know
Sometimes I
what
just
your
need
kids
that
are doing,
communication.
right? And
Yeah.
then you're, most of our kids can't go home and say like, hey mom, I did this. So,
Right.
you know, that I think the places that don't allow you to do that are the ones that we really need to be like, you know,
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's still. How do you see the role of ABA evolving in both school and clinical environments? And what changes or advancements are you hoping to see in the future?
honestly, you know, not to get into politics or anything, but I don't know what's going to happen with our funding for
Yeah, the
insurances
funding is.
and for schools, you know? So I can't predict that. Like, I can predict what I would want my utopia to be, right? Like, I would love for, you know, clinics and schools to be able to work together for a whole child, even for training for paraprofessionals, right? Like, in my mind, if we have paraprofessionals that are in school that need a little bit of training, and we have a shared, you know, client student together, why not let them come? I've done that before at other clinics. I've had teachers come in and watch our sessions, right? So they can see, you know, this is what this kid can do in this setting, right? And so let's hold them to that expectation too. Maybe not always in the other setting, but like, let's know that they are, I don't want to use the word able, but like they can do these things, right? You know? So I think just personally, I would like more collaboration between schools and clinics, you know, inviting teachers to come in and see what we do, how we work on one-on-one. And
a lot of teachers too, just
it really would.
Especially teachers that aren't, you know, they're stuck in like our experience. It's like, okay, so what the heck are we doing here? Like they would really benefit, I think, from going into a clinic and being able to see what you do there.
Because they're looking at so many behaviors at once that they can't even like break it down. But then I feel like once they have that eye and they can see like, oh, these are how the skills can be broken down. Okay, I can do that for a whole class if I needed to, right?
Right.
Yeah.
No, I love that. I like that idea of that utopian future of ABA.
Definitely utopian.
So how can practitioners ensure that they are culturally competent when working with diverse families? And what steps have you taken advocacy to work to address this?
So at my company, we do have like, you know, our culture competency training. I do like to, especially when I have like new technicians coming onto a case or during like orientation and with my students, I try to make them aware of, you know, things I've learned from experience, right? And things that I've read like in my classes and stuff, to just let them know, you know, I think sometimes it's really hard with the cultural competence to not understand. Like, I'll give you an example. In one particular culture, they like to still feed their kids. They feed their kids. So the kids don't necessarily. So one of our goals in ABA is, right, is like teaching them how to eat independently. But it's the sweetest thing in one culture. And I had one mom explain it to me. And it was just that parents kind of want continue to be kids. And she was telling me how she would be getting dressed to like go out at night and or get ready for school. And her dad would be feeding her while she did it, like when she's 20. And it's an act of love in their culture, right? Is that you're so busy getting to do these life things. Like, let me help you with this. And so, not that I would have changed it before I heard that story, but when I did, I was just like, wow, like it was just so impactful for me to learn that, like, we need to learn, we need to ask questions, like, hey, why do you guys do this? Yeah. And I mean, first we just need to accept it, but then ask those questions, why? Because I think sometimes we get so set on like, are they ever going to be independent if we're constantly feeding them, right? But then knowing that we can have them independent at school very well. We can have them independent at the clinic feeding, yeah, and their parents.
And then
can
at
still
home,
feed them.
right.
Yes. Like, it can happen. And so I think having a shared like view of it's okay, you know, because we always kind of practice like everybody's got to be doing the same thing for the kid to learn it. But honestly, students, like teachers, really spend more time with their kids than parents do. You know, more quality time.
Yeah, no,
and
that's
so
true.
We can make a difference. It doesn't always have to be followed up in the exact same way, right? And just being open to what parents and caregivers want and respecting their cultural beliefs as well, yeah. I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really important too. And, you know, I've met some parents with like different cultures and very similar, like different expectations. I was like, wait, but why are you doing that? That's very different. But I love what you just said about, feeding each other and just as an act of love. I think that's really sweet too. So what can you share some success stories from your time in the schools that highlight the power of advocacy and collaboration in supporting a child's development?
Okay. So I'm thinking of a few. I had a few in my mind before when I read this question. And then I don't know why, for whatever reason, those have left my mind and I've got some new ones. Because one of them isn't necessarily what I would call a success story because I really don't know how it ended. I just know that I kind of broke the rules of the school system and was like, you need to get your kid tested for ASD. You know, the parent didn't that year, but 4 years later, I got a Facebook message from the parent. Because I still did what the kid needed, whether they had autism or not, right? We looked at the behavior, we changed it in the classroom. Right. 4 years later, the parent said, we finally got them tested. And it's been life-changing with the amount of support that we have now. And that's so awesome. Much more successful. And it's just, you know, it was hard in that moment. It was hard in that moment because when you know, and that they would be able to get something, but they weren't ready for it yet. But then later they did. They did it. And now I don't know. So I just feel like sometimes planting those seeds, still doing what we need to do for kids, but, you know, planting those seeds for parents and understanding that they may not be ready to make that next step. And that's okay. Right? Like, we don't have to push, but advocating and collaborating is super important. And I just think transparency is even more important with both of those things, you know?
No, I love that. It just kind of, sometimes you're right, like just planting that seed without pushing, just kind of giving like a little like, hey, like, you know, maybe you could, you know, like get tested or try this out or like, you know, without pushing too hard. I think that that's really good too. And that's a good way to do it. What are some words of wisdom you would offer a new ABA practitioner entering the field? Probably those who work with parents too.
Okay. So one, I think it's like once you get all your ABA knowledge and you pass the test that you're like, you're ready to go save the world and you are ready to like hit every single problem that there is. And I think that most of us get burnt out pretty quick because we have a hard time saying no, because we're like, we know the answers. We know how to help. We know what to do. Right. And even though there's a lot of us out there, there's still not that many of us out there. Right. And right. So we think that we're the only ones. And so we stretch ourselves very thin. And so my advice is to still have a work-life balance. That's something I didn't know and something that no one told me in the beginning. And then I felt really, really bad when I started to get burnt out because I was like, you know,
yeah,
I don't know why I'm getting emotional, but like,
I feel that like I've definitely struggled. And then I'm like, and then I feel like I'm taking time like away, like from my own family.
Right.
I'm trying to like balance and help everyone. But yes. Right, there isn't a lot of us. Like there is a lot of us. I like how you said that there is a lot of us, but there's not a lot of us. Like, you know, you can have a lot of RBTs, but there's very few analysts with RBTs. So we feel like we got to save the world sometimes.
Right, right. And so I think it's a slow and steady pace. It's probably, you know, we need to be the turtle in the race, right? You know, slow and steady, because then we're able to help more people over time, right? Instead of helping a bunch of people really fast and getting burnt out over time, we're able to help more people. And then working with parents, I think always try to put yourself in their shoes. Try to understand what their family needs are, their family dynamics. A lot of times I've taken over some cases from other BCBAs and the parents didn't feel as if there was a connection or understanding of the needs of their family, right? Like, for instance, if like Chick-fil-A is the only place that everybody in the family eats, we might not want to use that as a reinforcer for our kiddo, because as a mom on a night when I don't want to cook, I don't care about your ABA stickers. We're going to Chick-fil-A because I'm only going to one place, right? So, you know, being reasonable and understanding and knowing that like, yes, this is the best intervention that we know, or this is the best reinforcer, but it's okay to use that second and third one. It may take us a little bit longer to change behavior, but what are we asking the family to do? And I think that that's, and same with parents and teachers, because I think that's what gives ABA a bad rep, is that we go in And we're asking them to do these things that are really unattainable. And then so they're not going to be ran with fidelity. And we're really not going to see the progress that we want to see anyway. So, okay, well, let's rethink. And that's one thing that I've always asked parents is I say, hey, you're going to tell me, you know, your problem. You're going to ask me what we need to do. I'm going to give you an answer. If that is not feasible for you, like if there's no way you're going to be able to do that,
right,
just say that, because it's my job to come up with, I mean, and I literally have in my little toolbox about 200 different ways that we can approach this. So yeah. I'm going to give you my best case answer, right? And if that's not okay, then say it. Don't try to do it just because it's the best one. We have to do something that works for everyone, because yeah. Burnout is real, even as parents, you know?
Parents too, right. And you're right. Like definitely, like, you don't want to use that same reinforcer or something that you already do. Or if it's something, you know, I tell parents, like, one time I told a parent, like, you know, if we create like a treasure box for them at the house, but the parent, you know, had like low funds, so like we had to come up with other ways to have something every time tangible for this kiddo. So but I think that's great that you approach that way to parents. I think that they feel like they're a part of it too, versus like you're just coming in and telling them a bunch of stuff that they need to do. Parents don't usually like that.
No, they don't.
So finally,
and sometimes I've had parents that are like, no, we're going to do it. And I'm like, are you sure we're going to do it? Like, I don't know. Like, yeah. And then they're like, no, we're going to. And then a week later we come back and we're like, okay, let's revisit this because it didn't really work that well, but it's okay. It's no big deal, you know?
Right. So. Finally, what is a takeaway that you hope listeners will have after hearing your insights about the connections between advocacy, education, and clinical work in ABA?
I think maybe the biggest takeaway is that we all just need to be transparent and honest with each other about what we can do, what we can't do, what we want, what we don't want, right? And then ways, you know, taking the moment to kind of be in that other person's shoes, regardless of what it is, whether it's the teacher or OT or a speech therapist, right? Like, and then just remembering that we all have the same goal. So we can get there. We can get there. We just all have the same goal as long as we keep that in mind, you know.
Well, thank you so much for today and your time. And again, listeners, if you liked today's episode, make sure to like and subscribe to our podcast. And if you have any questions or concerns, reach out to ABA Mom on social media.
Thank you, Allie.
Of course. Thank you.